Struggling to communicate with your co-parent? That's why Peaceful Co-Parenting Messenger was created. It's a communication tool for all co-parents, but especially those who are in high conflict situations. I always tell co-parents who ask, sign up for Peaceful Co-Parenting Messenger as early as possible in your separation and divorce process, because you never know when you're going to need a more robust communication tool that allows you to set boundaries on the communication you have with your co-parent. Are you getting messages that look like war and peace? It's not a text message. It's the length of a novel. Set the brief chat limitation in the app and keep those messages short and to the point. It's about the kids, right? Keep the focus there. You can also limit the number of messages you receive in a day and other nice a la carte features meant to bring sanity to your life. You deserve that, and your kids do too. Peaceful Co-Parenting Messenger in the Apple App Store and soon in the Google Play Store. Go to peacefulparentapp.com for more information.
This week on Peaceful Co-Parenting Podcast.
We look at them, maybe we're angry at this person, whoever it is in our life that is causing hostility, and we want to treat them the way they deserve to be treated. That doesn't serve your purpose. It won't make you happier. It may for like 5 seconds. It ends up causing more damage for you and more difficulty for your long-term goal. So treat them how you would want to be treated. It builds on a potential for a more positive relationship.
Welcome to Peaceful Co-Parenting Podcast, where we discuss strategies and tips to improve your co-parenting situation, especially if it's high conflict. I'm Bianca Ballo, co-parent, mother, and entrepreneur, creator of Peaceful Co-Parenting Messenger app, and believer in turning challenging situations into something positive. This week, we're talking about how to move from a combative co-parenting relationship to a collaborative one. And our guest today wrote a book on this very topic. Teresa Harlow is an author, a mother, and a co-parent. She was able to walk the walk of collaborative co-parenting after her own divorce. She has a son who's 28 years old now, but was age 6 at the time of her separation from her ex-husband. Welcome, Teresa. How are you doing today?
Great, Bianca. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being on. So tell our listeners a little bit more about you.
Yeah. So I've been on this journey as a co-parent for about 22 years. And like you said, our son was 6 years old when we divorced, and now he's 28. And I'm somewhat of a habitual information sharer. So when I have a journey that I learn a lot from, I want to share it with others so that they don't have to live through the agony of some of the things that I figured out along the way. So, you know, at this point, I decided, well, now that he's telling us, yeah, I had a pretty happy childhood, I'm like, well, first of all, yay. And second of all, then that means maybe we've got some information that other people could benefit from, because I really am a firm believer that most, not all, but most parents can do this.
Yeah, it's not always so easy. We have bumps in the road, and I'm sure you had some bumps too.
Right.
And so I just thank you so much for sharing some of your insight with us and what you learned. This isn't your first book, though.
It's not.
It's your second book. Tell us about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So the first book was called Happily Divorced, or is called Happily Divorced. And it was more of a memoir. It was our story, how my son's father and I chose to co-parent our son. And it wasn't to, you know, pass judgment on anybody else or even say it was the right way to do it. But so many people had told us it seemed like it was easy for them to interact with both of us together in settings like soccer and school functions. And they really saw how our son shined as a result. So they encouraged me to share our story. And I did that. And then after it was out there a bit, I got some feedback that it looks like you guys did a great job. Hooray for you. That's awesome. I don't think we could do it. And I listened to their feedback, and they talked about a lot of situations that, frankly, either we didn't encounter or that I didn't cover in the same way in the first book that I felt needed to be explored. So I did this second book to help people understand, you know, what they can do about these combative behaviors. And the funny thing is, when I first started writing it, Bianca, I was really coming at it with the idea of, okay, you are doing these combative things, and here's what you need to do to stop doing them. And that's how I was writing it. And I shared some early chapters with a friend of mine, and he had been through a pretty tumultuous co-parenting relationship with his ex, and his kids were older by this point. And he said, "This is great and all, but my ex wouldn't have read this, and I'm the one that would have read it. And you're really focused on trying to convince her what to do, and it doesn't necessarily tell me what I can do." And I'm like, right. "Ooh, you're right." And so I took that away. I'm like, I got to solve that, because there are victims of combative, hostile behavior. Mm-hmm. And I've been on the other side of that in other relationships in my life. And I know how terrible that is. And I worked my way through some of those relationships and reconciled them. And I mean, in business, I turned some of those people into raving fans. And I thought about, how did I do that? And so I decided to write this book with that in mind, and to not only explore, here's the things you are doing or are potentially not aware that you're doing that trigger another person into negative behavior and responses to you. And then also, if you're the recipient of hostility, what choices do you have? What can you do to make the situation better? How can you redirect the efforts to a better place? And so that's what I'm seeking to do with this book.
That resonates with me, because I frequently get that question with my app as far as, well, if you're the target of the, say, hostile behavior, you're willing to use the thing that can fix it, you know, possibly. But what about the other person who's, say, the difficult one? How do you get them to use the app? And then also, how do you get them to read a book like this so that you can get on the right track? And,
yeah,
you know, what I learned is, too, in my own co-parenting journey is that, you know, you both don't have to take the high conflict co-parenting class.
That's right.
Together, you know, and have it be all kumbaya. You can do it even if you are the target. You can learn so much. So that, I feel like that's kind of part of why someone would read this book, even if you don't think you're the problem. You can still get so much out of what you can do to improve the relationship.
Absolutely. And it's an excellent point, because, you know, people said that to me, they feel helpless or hopeless, or, you know, well, it's great, but they're not a willing participant. So why should I do it? And I would tell you that something magical happens when you repeatedly come at someone with things like empathy and acknowledging what they're saying. That doesn't mean you're agreeing with them, but just acknowledging that you heard them and letting them unload whatever on you. Finish. I heard what you said, even if it's just parroting back to them what they said, you know, it gives them a chance to kind of decompress from it, because they were ready for you to just come back at them, right? And so I tell parents that feel like maybe they're triggered by the other person and they feel antagonized. And what do I do about that? It's like, well, you can stop that cycle by using empathy and acknowledgement to paraphrase back to them what they said. That gives you a chance to calm down, and it lets them know that they are heard. Doesn't mean you agreed with them.
Yeah, I do think that our exes, the person that we've been intimate with, they know the triggers, they know the buttons to push. And so, yes, we kind of fall into that trap, you know, we get hooked. And so yeah, understanding ourselves, right? That's what we're talking about. What can you do? Understanding yourself and what your triggers are, then you can start to get a little bit more control over yourself and, you know, harness some kindness into the relationship to hopefully break that cycle.
You know, and you said something there that reminded me of a point that I think is important. This person is a former romantic partner. Okay. So there is that whole very emotionally charged interaction. But if you can think of placing your focus on the parenting piece of this and really set aside, and I know it's hard, but you can do it. Just funnel your vision toward parenting and set to the side that failed romantic relationship. That's not your focus now. Stop trying to get over it and stop trying to make them pay for whatever they did to you or any of that. You don't have to forgive them. They don't have to apologize, and you can still be good parents together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So your professional background is quite different from many who focus on this topic. How did you end up on this journey, Teresa?
Well, it is interesting. If you look at my LinkedIn profile or my resume, it's so weird because I've got this love-hate relationship with two things, apparently: corporate America and entrepreneurship. I mean, I've been in and out of both over the course of my adult life, you know, 30 years. The better part of 30 years spent in corporate America more often than not. But I get to a point where I, you know, maybe there's a reorg that I go through with that corporation and there's an opportunity to do something different. And I decide to follow a passion. And, you know, I've lived many different passions in my life. The first one was as a vocal coach. I had a love for vocal music and I wanted to share that love with others that couldn't figure out how to harness their power as a vocalist and but that wanted to. So I did that for a bit. And then I went back to corporate America because I kind of ran out of money. And I did that again. And I primarily worked with big teams on business or technology types of efforts and programs. Then I would get back to a point where I was like, I don't like working in corporate America or working for others. And in 2008, I think there was a big turn down in the economy and my role was eliminated. And I was also on this personal journey as a wellness coach. And so again, I turned to a personal passion and my rabid desire to share with others information that could help them improve their lives. And I became a wellness coach and did that privately for about 5 years. And then again, met up with some folks that encouraged me to come back to the technology realms. And then we hit the pandemic, another change in the guard at the company I was working for. And so I was given another, we'll call it opportunity. And I was actually thinking about it again. I think my expiration at corporate America is like maybe 5 years. And then I'm like, okay, I got to go do something else. So I had been writing, I had already written the first book while I was working for the last company, had decided to take it further and get into speaking and coaching and so forth. And so again, was given an opportunity to make a transition. And so I did. And here I am, hopefully helping others again.
And here you are. It's so great. But and the book released last year?
It did, in September.
Okay, great. So why did you choose the book title, Combative to Collaborative?
Well, I am a results-driven person. You know, talk is cheap to me. And a lot of people will complain about their lives, but aren't willing to make the changes necessary to have a different outcome. And so the idea of the book title, Combative to Collaborative, is to suggest a transformation, mm-hmm. actual action, and a result that is different on the other side.
Yeah. And you see that throughout the book, like you kind of lay out, here's the combative approach. And then you go into, here's what you can do differently. Here's the collaborative approach. So I really like that because it's very clear and it does give you a lot of things that you can do. Like you can take action today to improve your relationship. So I really appreciate that about the book.
People get kind of overwhelmed. There's a lot of information in there in the book. You don't have to do all of them to have success. Start with one of them and then build on that. You know, I always kind of approached my work the same way. I was a project manager and people get overwhelmed with big, huge goals. And if you break them down into smaller incremental improvements or to-dos, then it starts to be something you can get your arms around and make progress. Right. You can make progress toward it 1% at a time. Eventually 1%, it adds up to 100%.
day after day. It's those small things, right?
That's right.
You do get there. Another thing I really appreciated about the book is that you kind of take it, like, what stage are you in your relationship with your co-parent? So, like, if you're just newly separated and you're trying to figure out this whole co-parenting thing, you start there with them. But, like, let's say for me, I'm down the road and I have a difficult co-parenting relationship, you can jump to that section. And you encourage people to do that, where it's like, hey, if that's where you're at, start there. You don't have to read this book cover to cover. Just start where you're at and start taking action today to improve the relationship. So that's nice about the book too.
You know, we're not all in the same place, but it's interesting because you think maybe when you start on a journey as a co-parent, your first thought might be, well, I only have to do this until they're 18. You know, it's just kind of like our whole society is it revolves around that 18 years old and they're an adult sort of thing. The reality is different than that, because once they get to be 18, well, a lot of them are still in high school for one, but even after they get out of high school, there's college. Then after they get out of college, they get married, they have children. Do you really want to have a constant awkward life the rest of your time here on earth, or do you want to continue to improve on your experience as you go throughout the course of every stage? And so I hope to give people insight that they can use no matter where they're at.
So tell us about the subtitle, The Co-Parenting Code.
So the word code to me really kind of conjures up two things. You know, I did spend that time in technology, and code as in coding a program, you know, doing technology development comes to mind. And the other word that I think of when I think of code is code of ethics. And I firmly believe that if you have ethics, if you understand what's right and wrong, and you have a method or a program, you can achieve great things. And so this is my first book in the Combative to Collaborative series, and I plan to write future ones where, you know, this time it's the co-parenting code, maybe next time it's the community code or the citizens code or something in the co-worker code realm. Because a lot of these lessons that we apply in our relationships as co-parents transfer very easily to other difficult relationships you might encounter in your life.
Yeah. So let's dive into a specific question. As co-parents, are there things we do unwittingly that trigger our co-parent to respond negatively?
Yeah. You know, I think they run the gamut of subtle things like nonverbal behaviors, like rolling of eyes when they say something to you, or even if it's just something you didn't mean to do, like accidentally missing a text and then responding days later without acknowledging that, oh, sorry, I just saw this, and just moving on with it. Normal courtesies that we would extend to other people, again, we tend to withhold from, say, someone that we view as a former romantic partner. And that's why it's super important to try to set that title for this person aside and think of this as an opportunity to create a brand new relationship with them. Exchanging things seems to be a huge problem with a lot of parents.
Yeah, you bring that up in the book where you talk about, it's like the things that go with the child, right? Like clothes, you know, computers, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And, you know, I've spent time in relationships, long-term relationships, where the guy was, you know, a co-parent with another mom. You know, I witnessed some really ridiculous sorts of things. You know, don't look in her book bag. And the father wasn't supposed to ever go inside a book bag of his daughter. It's like, really? I don't know about you as a parent, but I told my son flat out, you have no privacy as my child until you're an adult, because I need to protect you. So I need to have access to your things at all time. And some people wouldn't agree with that. That's my choice as a parent. But this guy, his daughter would come over in a certain outfit. He would not be given any other clothes for the whole weekend, or maybe even a 2-week stint that he had her every summer. And so he would buy her clothes, and then she would take certain clothes back with her from that stuff that he purchased to the moms, never to be seen again. She would come back with the clothes on her back and nothing else. And this cycle just continued. And it was like, then eventually, what was his response? Well, rather than, you know, trying to reach out to the mom and fix this whole thing, I mean, he had his own problems too. He just said, okay, you know, just change out of that outfit that I got you back into what you came in and go back to your mom's in that. Don't take anything. And then it was just this, you know, constant cycle of petty behavior between the two. And what a terrible role model both of them were really being. I've seen parents that intentionally withhold information, but then there's the ones that just don't think about the idea, or they think, well, I got the information. The other parents should go get the information too. And maybe they should. But if you have the information and you think of this person as your teammate, as a parent, if you bring organization to the table, you're the teammate that brings organization, be the organizer and give them the information. And hopefully they bring something else to the table that will benefit the two of you. Maybe it'll be that they can stand up to others, who knows, Do the things that benefit the relationship, because that only works in your favor if they are informed on things like sports schedules or parent-teacher conferences or what your child is supposed to have at school on a given day.
Yeah, you mentioned the clothing example in the book, and I totally can relate to that. And I bet a lot of other people who are listening can relate to the whole, like, things that you send with your child that never come back. And it's just this, it feels really frustrating to constantly be purchasing new, whether it be electronics, toys, clothes, shoes, you know, I think it's a common one. So appreciate that example.
It is.
I'm listening to you talk about sharing information. And, you know, I've done that with a very aggressive, hostile response. And I've tried to think to myself, just let go of the outcome of how whatever my co-parent should be responding, you know, whatever I think, however he should be responding, and just share the information, just continue to share it. It's really hard when you feel like you're sharing information, but getting attacked. It feels like there's nothing really that you can do, right? Like,
well, you're.
Go ahead. I want to hear what you have to say about that.
You're doing the right thing, and sit in that, and know it, and continue to do that right thing. It doesn't matter what they say in response. You're still doing the right thing, Whether they respond negatively or not. I think it's very healthy for you to just not absorb whatever it is that they're saying back. We could talk about specific examples that probably would be more helpful to you personally. You know, that's the kind of thing where I can work with somebody one-on-one.
Right. And you do the coaching
and say, well, let's play it out. Give me the specific things they say to you and let me see if I can give you some ideas on what to say instead of whatever it is you feel like you want to say or whatever.
I'm glad you brought it up because you do coaching, and that I'm like, I think I need to call Teresa and get some coaching, because I can think of a specific example of, it was like a day with dudes at my child's school. Ah. And so it was cool the way they phrased it, because it was any male figure in my child's life. It could be their papa or stepdad or their dad, who, you know, it was like, you know, sharing that information was really about the kids. It was about who's going to show up for them. It wasn't about me or like, it's, but I have to say, it's really hard to continue to feel attacked every time you reach out and try to do the right thing. It's hard not to just shut down.
Yeah. And I think that takes us back to the strategies of using empathy and acknowledging what they're saying. So if someone comes at you with an attack, coming back to them with, so it sounds like this is frustrating you. Now, that didn't say to them, you agree with them, or it sounds like you're really angry about this, or what you are saying is, and then repeating back to them, whatever it is, you know, maybe paraphrasing it back the way you thought you heard it. And they may actually come back and say, no, that's not what I meant at all, or whatever. But if you have that exchange, you get past that. They say something, you ignore it. They say something else, you know, and you may or may not make progress that way. But if you are willing to go there, and I know it can expose you to the wrath of somebody, because I've got combative people in my life that I haven't been able to get past that barrier. The narcissist, the true narcissist, that can be very disconcerting. And so depending on what level of personality you're dealing with, some of those, you have to have some boundaries that you set for yourself on what you'll expose yourself to. But in most cases, you can keep coming at them with doing the right thing. When they come back at you hostily, acknowledge what they're saying, empathize. I understand this is frustrating you. And eventually, you know, it's weird, because if you keep doing that and someone keeps coming at you, there are people that'll keep coming at you. The true narcissist will just keep coming. Mm-hmm. And you're just probably not going to be able to stop them from doing that. And you need to continue to be focused on doing the right thing and being a good parent, and let them be who they are. You can't force them to change.
Right. I, you know, did kind of get to this headspace where it was like, don't worry about how he reacts or what he does or how he feels about it, or like the outcome. Just do what you think is right. Try to be the best, most ideal co-parent that you could come up with. And regardless of how he's acting, always ask yourself, what's the best thing you can do for your kids? And then whatever, let go of however he acts. So it is hard. I have to say it is hard, but also if you can remember what's best for your kids, you'll always, you know, pretty much make the right decision. So even if it's hurtful to you, how this person acts,
it can be in the moment, but their words can't hurt you if you don't allow them to. You will always be able to look back and go, well, I still did the right thing. And that's something honorable and something that will sustain you.
I think you're totally right. And I have, you know, think back at some times where I didn't share the info, you know, and it's just, and I kind of like cringe, because I, you know, I remember kind of thinking to myself, well, everything that you said in the book, you know, which is the combative approach, which was like, you know, it's his job to get this information from the school, and it's not my job to provide it. And, you know, it was that kind of thinking. And also,
I think it's what we all have going through our mind. And what I'll say is, you know, focus on treating the other person the way you want to be treated, because a lot of times we can't treat them the way we look at them. Maybe we're angry at this person, whoever it is in our life that is causing hostility, and we want to treat them the way they deserve to be treated. And I get it. That doesn't serve your purpose. It won't make you happier. It may for like 5 seconds. Okay. The catharsis of it, whatever, but it ends up causing more damage for you and more difficulty for your long-term goal. So treat them not how you think they deserve to be treated or how they've made you feel. Treat them how you would want to be treated.
Yeah.
So really focus very clearly on yourself. You don't even have to think about them then, which is a nice thing, right? Maybe you don't want to think about them.
Yeah.
So you don't have to. And that's why I'm saying you don't have to forgive them. You don't have to like them. You don't have to apologize to them if you're on the other side of a particular situation where they think, I'm not going to deal with you until you apologize. Mm-hmm. It's like none of you all of that is unnecessary prerequisites to put on the concept of co-parenting.
Yeah. You know, totally. That's why I really like this book. Was I'm in the midst of this difficult co-parenting relationship, and I realized as I was listening to the book, the audio book, that there was a lot that I could do, but I'm all those things, angry. I'm resentful. I'm hurt from the past attacks, and I shut down and I just kind of move in a different direction. But
well, first of all, don't be so hard on yourself. Second, though, it's more than doing it for your kids. And it's not about doing it for your ex. Okay. If that makes you not want to do it, then don't think of it that way. It's about doing it for you too. Because now, if you've done the right thing, like I was saying a few minutes ago, you can look back and go, I did the right thing. So be it that they didn't take it positively or whatever. if they do, if by chance they do, then it builds on a potential for a more positive relationship. And it's just those little, you know, putting a chink in their armor sort of thing, right? If they're a real hard ass about this.
Yeah.
And, you know, breaking it down for them a little bit, opening them up to the possibility that there's more that you two can be together as co-parents in this different relationship.
That is definitely an awesome possibility of good co-parenting behavior. But I also have to say that in my experience with my co-parent, I've really had to let go of any expectation that anything and any action that I did would actually improve things, because then I'm disappointed when it doesn't, you know? And so it's like, I mean, yes, it could happen. And that would be awesome if it did. But I have to say, sometimes it's almost better to be like, I'm doing this for me.
Absolutely.
I'd have absolutely zero expectation that anything's going to change.
Well, see, and that's kind of what I'm saying is take the focus off of your relationship with them per se in its former entity, or even expecting anything of them. Mm-hmm. Do it for the purpose of being a good parent. Do it for the purpose of making your life better. Do it for the potential, not necessarily expecting it, just on the rare chance that it might add to the positives. If you have a choice to put something in a negative or pump something in a positive, why not build up the positive pile? Because it improves your chances of a better outcome.
It's true. That's how goodness happens.
Yeah. Stick it there and then let go of your expectation. I think that's perfectly legitimate and perfect.
So what could you do when things go off the rails to reset the relationship with your co-parent?
So I have four steps that I call kind of the communication reset. And you can do it no matter which side of the combative piece you're on, whether you need to go to somebody with a conversation or they're coming at you hostily. If you have to have a conversation that you know is going to be challenging with someone, start with focusing on the purpose that you want to serve. What is your purpose for interacting with this person? And I don't mean what do you want. I mean, what is your purpose for your relationship with this person? What needs to be preserved out of it? And that's your purpose. If you're a co-parent, you need to preserve the ability to interact with this person as the parent of your other child for the better of both your child and you. Second, obviously going to invite them to talk to you, right? And when you do that, remember, empathize with them, whatever they have to say about the matter, and acknowledge that you heard them. You don't have to agree.
Right.
You don't have to take it any further than that. Just pair it back to them or paraphrase back to them what you heard them say. Give them a chance to say, yeah, that's what I said, or yeah, that's how I'm feeling, and go on with it further and let them do that. Then tell them what it is that you would like to accomplish. What result are you looking for? Be specific about what it is you're wanting to accomplish as a result of this conversation you're having. You don't want to fight with them. You want to solve a problem. So ask them for help then finally in solving that problem. Because if you don't invite them into the process, they're just going to start to feel like you're telling them what to do again. So focus on your purpose, empathize and acknowledge with them, state your desire, and don't defend it and don't try to convince them. Just state what it is you want. And then ask for their help in solving the problem.
Yeah, they become invested in the solution and in fixing it.
Yeah, because when we just come at somebody telling them what to do, we all do. We don't want to be told what to do.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, nobody does. That's so true.
Yeah.
So besides parents, who could use your book?
So extended family can benefit quite a bit from this. You know, unfortunately, there's a lot of collateral damage around divorce. Parents, there's grandparents, there's aunts, there's even friends that maybe played key roles in the kids' lives. So they could certainly glean a lot from the book. Besides them, professionals that and organizations that deal with families in distress certainly could provide this book to their clients. And what it will do for them is help them get in the right mindset, a more receptive place to negotiate with a co-parent about the parenting plan, or for the family therapist to help their patients to get their minds opened up about self-awareness and not continuing to feel like they're a helpless victim. And then I've also been told that teachers really could use this. I've been told by quite a few people I should go talk to schools.
Absolutely. And in addition to that, like teachers, oftentimes they're dealing with combative students in their class. So turning it around and being empathizing and acknowledging, you know, so that can probably bring some collaboration to the classroom too. So lots of different areas where this book could be very valuable. Teresa, how can people get a hold of you?
So the book is Combative to Collaborative, The Co-Parenting Code, and it is available on Amazon. You can also get it in a retail store. You might have to ask for it if it's not there. Then my website, teresaharlow.com, where I have not only information about my books, but also my other services, my coaching offerings, and a blog, and all kinds of good information, as well as probably a link to this podcast at some point.
Nice, nice. And speaking of links to Teresa's first book, second book, her website, and her social will be in the show notes. Do you have another book that you're working on or have in mind, or where are you at right now with what's next for you?
You know, the whole world seems to be stuck in this combative behavior with one another, right? So I'm really I'm getting ready to outline the next book, which will be a combative to collaborative book. And I haven't settled on which kind of code we're doing, whether it's citizen code, community code, or something to that effect. We really have got to get a grip on our ability to have conversations where we can disagree cordially and still maintain relationships. I think too often we're treating our relationships as disposable, and they're so important to who we are as a community and what we are able to achieve. So that's kind of what I'm planning to focus on.
It sounds great. I love the title because you really have set it up to have all different kinds of codes. And so you can really do a lot with it. And I look forward to seeing what you do next. Thank you so much for joining me on the show. And maybe with the next book, you'll come back on and share it with us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Bianca. This was fun.
I had fun too.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Peaceful Co-Parenting Podcast. I hope the time was well spent and you got a lot out of the episode. If so, please rate and review the podcast. I would really appreciate it. If you're interested in sending me a feedback message, asking a question, suggesting a podcast topic or guest, or downloading Peaceful Co-Parenting Messenger as a tool for better communication with your co-parent, go to peacefulparentapp.com or see the links in the show notes. Have a great week, and as always, stay peaceful.
This episode of Peaceful Co-Parent was brought to you by the Equal Shared Parenting Program. Do you find that you're ever in need of someone to talk to, like a counselor or a therapist? How about legal advice? If you've looked into it, you know these services can add up financially. That's why the Equal Shared Parenting Program exists, to help parents be their healthiest, holistic selves. It's a membership program that offers discounted and free services, like behavioral health, free tax prep and advice, and access to financial education and credit counseling, all for the low price of $29.99 a month. Learn more about the Equal Shared Parenting Program by going to equalsharedparentingbenefits.org/PCPM. The PCPM stands for Peaceful Co-Parenting Messenger. That's equalsharedparentingbenefits.org/PCPM.